Making the Decision to Marry was presented as a panel discussion led by David Crabtree on October 24, 2007, in McKinsey Study Center's Wednesday night class. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2007. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Today is the 26th anniversary of the day that I married my wife. So, it would appear that I decided to marry, and I decided to marry my wife. So let me tell you that story briefly. My wife and I met in, it was late in March. In fact, we met at Wes and Carol's house. We were over there for dinner. So that was the very first time that we had met. Then, over the course of the next 3 months or so, there were several times when we were at the same place at the same time. We were involved in a Bible study that met irregularly, as I recall. There were a couple of other times that we were together with groups of other people. Then, just early July, there were a couple of days in a short period of time that I invited her to go on a bike ride with me, and we rode all over and spent quite a bit of time talking, and she came to the 4th of July at my parents' house, which is an experience for her. She saw everybody in prime form, and everybody in the family acting like they usually act, and it was quite entertaining. Probably the next day, or no, it was a week later, we went on a walk, and I told her that if I had to choose right now, I would choose to marry her. But that that I was interested in getting to know her more and deciding what to do. And so we started seeing each other almost daily then for about a month, after which time I asked her to marry me. And she said yes. And we wanted to get married as soon as possible after that. So we figured, let's see, we can probably do it in a month. My youngest brother was out on a fishing boat and with no way of communicating with him. And we decided that we would wait until he got to shore. So we put it off for an extra month. So it was from when we got engaged, let's see, it was August, September, yeah, it was 2.5 months until we got married. No, and my brother didn't make it off the boat. He wasn't there. I'm not recommending that way of doing it. Now as I look back at things, I'm surprised my parents weren't more shocked. But one of the things that strikes me when I talk to other people that I know is there are some really interesting stories about how couples got together, and some that I would not recommend, but God works in strange ways. And I think it is the case that there is not a way to meet the person that you're going to marry and decide who you're going to marry, that it takes a lot of different shapes and forms and different processes. I mean, it used to be that I would have said that meeting someone, for instance, on the internet would not be good. Well, I still wouldn't recommend it, but that happens, and I and I don't know that it's, I wouldn't say it's wrong. I don't know that I would recommend that as a way of doing it, but there are lots of different ways. Deciding who to marry, what are the criteria? Before I got married, for a while I was making lists of the characteristics that I needed, you know, in a wife, and it was a long list. It included liking the backpack and the right. She had to like the right kind of music and be able to weld and various important qualities. Really, as I thought about it then, and as I thought about it more, those things are obviously trivial. That your interests will change. So if you're trying to pick someone that will matches your interests, they may match for the year after you get married, but she didn't know how to weld. And at the time, she didn't like country western music. Yeah, I thought it was safe to marry her, but it wasn't. So those things change, and I don't know how important they are in the first place, because part of being married is merging lives, and when you merge lives, you become, to one degree or another, interested in what your spouse is interested in, and vice versa. So those will grow together to one degree or another. What is important is that you share fundamental values. When you come together in marriage and join your lives, that means that you are going to have to act as one body. That you become one, and you make decisions that have a huge impact on each other. And so it is absolutely critical that you share fundamental values, and that's why, as a Christian, it's critical that you marry someone that shares those values and shares that passion for being a servant of God. How do you determine that? That's a tough question. As we all know and think about where we are spiritually, sorting out in your own soul where you are is a difficult chore. When you think about determining that with respect to another person, that becomes even more difficult. I'm convinced that it isn't necessarily a matter of matching theologies. That you don't have to have extensive theological compatibility. It doesn't hurt, because it helps you to understand one another and see things through similar eyes. But it is not critical. Seems to me that the most critical thing is where is the heart going? What is the soul tender to? And I think of it in terms, and it doesn't even need to be mature spiritual maturity. I think it would be perfectly fine to marry someone that is spiritually still has a long ways to go if you know they're headed in the right direction. And that's an issue that the way I think about it is teachability. That you want to marry someone that has all of the earmarks of someone who is spiritually teachable, somebody who is responsive to God. And the rest is all to be worked out. It is, I think, realistic to assume that the person that you marry will be the same person that you're married to in 25 or more years. realistically, people don't change a lot. I know that it's tempting to think that you've met someone that you like to one degree or another, but there are some issues there that are difficult for you. And you think, well, once we get married, all of those will disappear. Not likely. Not likely. We just don't change all that much. Some change happens, and that's a good thing to know. But people are not going to become different people once they're married. The person that you marry is the person you'll continue to be married to. Now let's stop there and throw it open for questions.
Can I? I was thinking it might be good to identify some things that help us understand or know whether someone is teachable spiritually. Some of the things that looks like, rather than others. I wonder if you have any things immediately that come to mind.
Well, I'm not much of one for methods. Yeah, so there isn't a method for doing that. But I think it's a matter of observing someone in difficult situations, and it's not so much how they respond initially to the difficult situation. What is more helpful is how they respond a little bit later to a difficult situation. Because our first response to things is oftentimes a kind of an automatic response, and it's not one that necessarily reflects our real commitments. It's as time goes on that you see those real commitments come to the fore. And times when people are confronted with true things, and oftentimes true things that hurt, what do they do with that? If they're confronted with something about themselves that's wrong, do they become defensive? Do they deny it? Do they deflect blame? And again, it's the longer term response, not necessarily the response right at the moment. But those are the kinds of things it seems to me are the most likely to provide the kind of information you need.
I just want to reiterate that I think that teachability thing, one of the most important things in a long-term relationship is that other person going to be willing to admit when they have done wrong, and are they willing to forgive me when I have? Because that's, you're going to mess up and they're going to mess up. And if you get locked into that, when I have messed up, I don't want to acknowledge it, and when you have messed up, I want to take a pound of flesh for it, then that's a very common thing to happen in a long-term relationship, and that's where it really gets unworkable. So, I think having that sense, for whatever faults the other person might have, that basically I can trust them to be willing to go down the road of figuring out, yeah, there's some bad things happened here, but I'm willing to accept that in you and admit my own part. And that's absolutely huge. And I think you could call that teachability. Because that's the deepest. If you can do that there, then you can do that in a lot of different areas. I don't want to deflect. I have a question myself, and people don't have to go there if they don't want to, but we're talking here about the question of who to marry. There is also that question of whether to marry, which kind of goes along with it. And I have just gotten the impression, I may be totally wrong, but I have gotten the impression that the culture in general and young people, that I just get the impression that marriage is a less attractive option than it used to be, or a scarier option than it used to be, that people are getting married later and putting it off and reluctant to get involved in it. And I'm just interested in whether that, I mean, you guys, as we come into this, the question of getting married, as we're talking about that, is this, yes, I really want to get married, but I'm not exactly sure how you go about it kind of thing, or I'm not really sure whether I want to do that. And I don't want people on the spot, but I'm interested in that, I think. Because I, speaking for myself, I was scared. I mean, Robbie and I hung around together for a long time before I got the courage up to actually face into this marriage stuff. So if you're in that spot, I'm sympathetic, because that's where I was too.
Does it sounds like David didn't have that same issue.
No.
I think that is a really important part of the topic, especially these days. And part of what I think could be helpful to clarify, I haven't thought a lot about whether to say this or how to say it, but thinking about a culture where the question, I think you're right, in the culture we're in now, there's a big question of whether or not I would marry. But it doesn't seem to be the question of whether or not I will be with someone. And I think that's a really important thing to look at, because I could decide to not get married. I decided to not get married in my 20s, for example. It never meant I wasn't in a couple. And it wasn't until much later that I realized that my decision to not marry meant to be single. And that's a really different thing. And I think that that's a really important part of that decision, is if I'm going to decide to not marry, then what I'm deciding is to not be partnering with another person. And so thinking about how do I even think about what marriage is and what I believe about it, what it can be. I think there is a lot of fear of marriage because there's so much... I was going to say bad press, but it's more like everybody has experiences of marriage as being really devastating to people. And it's not been good. And I know that was a lot of it for me, was my view of marriage was very, was not a good view. My perspective on marriage was that it was the last thing anyone should want to do. Because of most of the marriages that I had been seen, you know, from a distance, or even my own parents' marriage, for example. My own parents' marriage, just to give a little bit to that, they went through a real tragedy when I was quite a young child, and they spent the first 15 years after that tragedy not doing very well in their marriage. It was a very difficult time. But after 15 or 20 years, they recovered and had a good marriage in the end. The bad news was that was my childhood. That when they struggled was my early years. And so I didn't have a very good impression of marriage. But in the end, as I saw them actually work through it, and I still remember watching them celebrate their 50th wedding anniversary, and seeing them as these friends who had gone through so much together, it was really striking to me that marriage could be something really deep and rich and good and hard, because it doesn't guarantee that life isn't really hard. Life was really hard for my parents, and yet they had a lot of really good stuff that came out of that. So anyway, kind of an aside, but...
Because the topic is, in a sense, when to marry, why you should marry, and also, I mean, the recurring theme is, you know, someone's apprehension about being married, about being in a married relationship, opposed to some of the people who don't have that apprehension. where David had pretty much a mad dash to the matrimonial aisle. I met Jessica when she was a sophomore and I was a senior, and we pretty much became friends there. She became friends with my sister. And then I think we started dating around the next year after I'd gone to, I was going to community college. She was probably a junior then, and then I came up here to go to school. And so we had about 4 or 5 years of dating, half of which was probably long-term, which was, again, one of the best things for us. We didn't necessarily have bicycle rides, but we were more like...
Should have tried it.
So, and then long, lonely car rides all the way down there. And then she came up here with under no illusion that she was coming up here for me or to spend time with me. It was actually that she was going to a very good school, and it had nothing to do with the fact that I was already here. Which felt great.
I was in spite of that.
And it was kind of a continual. Our relationship was, I don't necessarily know if it was a mistrust of marriage wholesale. I think it was a mistrust both of, I think at the time I thought she just didn't like me, but I think in reality she was very savvy about what my eros was, and not that it was an unwholesome thing, but just recognizing that marriage is this thing that you're going to see this person for the rest of your entire life, and I think it was a continual dialogue between my sense of this idea that I wanted to be a provider and I wanted to be a good man, and her sense of figuring out in which way I could actually fulfill that end of the bargain and which way I was actually over-talking myself. And so it was always this really casual, like complicated dance between me and her, given that she was very elusive with her commitment to me in any sense. I mean, we kind of had these 3 or 4 talks where I was like, really? You're coming all the way up to Oregon. I end up in the same town as me, and it has nothing to do with me at all. And like, and we had 3 or 4 of those in the dating period of me kind of going, you know, I need you to at least verbally commit to the fact that you kind of like me, like yeah, just a little bit. And then eventually it was, she was very savvy. She recognized that, you know, how are we going to eat? I mean, these things that, I mean, Eros doesn't let a boy think about. That's just what we can't just consume our general nice affection for each other. That, what do you mean, money? I mean, we got each other, which totally made sense to me at that time. And I really like that version of myself. And I'm so glad she won that argument almost every time. But the quaintness of our relationship is that somehow we both worked really well together. Like her, for lack of a better sense, or lack of a better word, common sense, and my kind of like totally indomitable spirit, like really worked well. Like so that when she came back with these things that at the time I thought were crushing rejections, I'd like, you know, pout about it for 5 seconds and then be like, I still like her. And it was just like that kind of simple. And then we got married and she pretty much was right about everything. And like in the marriage for the first 2 years was extremely difficult, like more difficult than the worst parts, in my opinion, of our dating period. Our dating period was difficult. It was difficult not really feeling like the other person was with you in this whole adventure. And then you get married and it's so intense and it's so permanent and real, and you're looking at this person and you're thinking about, you know, how much you miscommunicate with this person who you thought you knew. And it wasn't that we got married and didn't know each other all of a sudden. It was that we got married and all of a sudden got to know each other all of a sudden. And some of the darkest nights of my entire existence happened in the first 2 years of our marriage. And that's funny, but wasn't
don't
funny.
Oversell it.
No, I'm not. Like, so, I mean, that whole dialogue, I mean, 4 years, 5 years almost dating, and now we've been married for almost 6 years, and it has continually changed in different ways, both extremely pleasant in ways totally unexpected, and at the same time, it's been extremely difficult, like extremely painful. I don't think I was ever as had moments of complete loneliness as you have when you're married. Just a profound sense of isolation and helplessness, because, I mean, we're two people who did like each other, but there were moments where all we could do was, I mean, be as far away spatially from each other just to make sure we could see each other the next week, kind of thing. So, I mean, yeah, no, her apprehension, her wisdom versus my kind of absolute being thrilled to be around someone of her nature. And don't get me wrong, I think she did, I mean, in the end, like, we talk about why to get married. I married Jessica because I saw in her story the story of someone who recognized her createdness before God. And I'm a very anti-religious person, very anti-Christianity person, and so it's hard for me to phrase this without using terms that I inherently find repulsive. But for lack of a better phrase, she loved God, and I saw her put the God first, which meant that she literally suffered more in her life because she loved her Creator. And so, in a sense, it was that I thought was worth it. And I think, in the end, for her, I think the way she's described it is that despite my flaws, which were evident, and I didn't try to hide very effectively because I wouldn't have been able to do it, so I was just pretty much out there all the time with them. You guys all probably know already what they are. But despite that, I mean, she sensed that I was true. I mean, I think that's the best way to phrase that the person she knew was actually the person I was, and I was a bumbling, crazy, insane person, and I still probably am like that. Thanks a lot, David. So... That apprehension and that tension and all the fear and things, I love that David says people don't change, because people don't change. Like, my wife responds to things the same way, and part of marriage is that how much of that matters and how much can you dialogue with the person and how much are they willing to go, you know what, you're right, I'll change this. And part of it is just you waking up to you not being a nice person. And so them kind of bumping up against your worst qualities and traits. If you have someone who is long-suffering, like the person I think I married, you're a lucky person, because you are a pain in the ass. That was it.
I don't know what the question is, but I guess as I listen to you, and I think two things. As believers, we do, though, have the Spirit of God in us. And what impact do you think that practically has on two people who are married? And secondly, I know we shouldn't marry thinking the other person is going to change, but certainly, I would hope that we would want to change, because recognizing that we are sinners and woefully inadequate, I mean, I think our whole goal is to be godly and holy and pursuing righteousness. So maybe it's not realistic to ask to think of our spouses changing very much, but how realistic is it to hope that we will change?
It seems to me that the biggest difference that being a believer makes in the marriage situation is we can trust that God knows what he's doing. So it really frees us up in the sense that we don't have to engineer the right kind of outcome of things. That even if the relationship goes really bad, that God is doing what he needs to do to accomplish what he wants to accomplish in our lives. So I would say that's the most important thing that being a Christian brings to the marriage, is it we can trust that God is doing right by us, no matter what happens in the marriage. Now, with respect to how much change we can expect, I am convinced that God works in our lives and makes significant changes in our lives in this world. He can and he does. But those changes are at a really deep level, deep in our soul. Those are significant changes, profound changes. But there are many, there are things that I have changed about me because that was, it was important to my wife that I change those things. So, for instance, when we first got married, it was bothersome to my wife that I'm coming and going here. And so we'd be driving down the road, and I wouldn't be saying anything, and she'd say, "Well, what are you thinking right now?" And I'd say, "Nothing." And, "Oh, you've got to be thinking something." And I'd say, "Well, yeah, there goes milepost 21. So, and so it was important to her that I share my thoughts. So I have become better at that, believe it or not, and have become, relatively speaking, a chatterbox. Isn't that right? But so there are things that adjustments that I have made, but if you take me before we got married and me now, I'm more the same than I am different. That there is some things that there are some things that have changed. I would say that that there are ways in which God has softened me, and I have more patience than I had then when we first got married. Am I being fairly accurate? There are some things that have changed, but it's those kinds of things that have changed. And much of who I am is just who I am, and that, it doesn't matter if we're married another 25 years, that's not going to change.
And sometimes, for some people, that is one of the hardest things to work with in marriage, is that the person that they're married to really doesn't see it the way that they see it. Yeah, I mean, and there really are these profound differences, like Jack was talking about, just the difference between being a man and being a woman. Monumental. And it seems to me that what I watch people struggle with so deeply in marriages that I consider to be really good, solid marriages, long-term, 30-year marriages, that are, it's just still really painful to know this person so well and have so much good, and still they don't get that part of me, or they don't get that part of them, or they and it isn't that, it isn't for lack of trying. I don't think it's, you know, any of us, and I mean, I feel the same way about me, because, you know, frankly, I've had to live with me all this time. I don't even have anybody else to blame, you know. My arguments are only with me, but there's so much that I would love to have change about me, that I catch myself doing the same thing again, or not seeing something that I thought, surely the next time that happens, I'll see it better. And so I don't think it's for lack of trying in a marriage where that's the case. It's really out of wanting to care about this person, wanting to love them, wanting to know how to be what they need to be, and just frankly not being able to pull it off, because the bottom line is we just can't do that for each other all the way. And it's what we're left with is figuring out what it looks like to trust God in the midst of that. And it's a really good process to have to work with that. And it's an amazingly, it's also a huge gift to go through life with someone and be committed to that same project and know that even in the midst of the difficulty and the pain of it, we know each other and we really care about each other. And it matters to me that I keep doing that to you, even though I can't seem to not keep doing it.
There are ways in which my wife would prefer that I demonstrate that I love her, and I feel like it is obligatory on me to try to do that, to try to show love to her the way that she would like to be shown that she is loved. But there is so much about that that is just not me. No matter how hard I try, I don't do it well. I don't do it consistently. So it's important that I try to do that, that I be a student of my wife and figure out what it is that is pleasing and helpful to her and try to do that. It also becomes her job to interpret what I'm doing. And if I don't do it the way that she would like me to do it, at least that she can understand that I'm doing it as best I can and that I'm showing love maybe in different ways, not the way she would prefer, but ways that are more that are more fitting with my character, that just comes out that way. So it's a huge compromise, it's a huge struggle on the part of both people to try to understand the other one and communicate and act on their terms, but to also to understand and read the intent of the other person and how they're reaching out to you.
I guess I'd add to that, I think another way that it matters that we have the Holy Spirit working in us is fundamentally, it's probably the same thing that David just said, but I just a little different layer maybe, is just that we can trust God that he's for our good in whatever happens in the marriage. We can also trust that God is committed to teaching us as individuals, and that will, over time, as I'm committed to being softened and being taught, that there is a lot of hope for a deepening relationship. That the idea of the Spirit of truth, that God's Spirit in us reveals to us what's true. And I think fundamentally that's truth about ourselves, that, you know, we can ultimately trust God to show us ourselves and how we love or fail to love. And that's a really valuable commitment on his part.
And on the subject of change, because I get to see all the terrible things. Not only did I have expectations for my wife to treat me in a way that was ultimately totally immature. Like, I mean, this concept that she would be my biggest fan and think that everything I did was just absolutely the most genius thing ever. And not getting that was probably one of the most maturing experiences of my existence. I mean, I'm the eldest child, and my mother thinks I'm the coolest. And I think I'm the coolest. and thank God I married someone who is actually interested in who I actually am and in feeding the part of me that is kind of like striving in the good way. And I think of how many fights we had in our dating experience and how many fights we even have still today where I'm like, well, why can't you just think I'm the greatest? And her kind of, I mean, because that's not, I mean, thank God I didn't get what I wanted. I mean, thank God I'm not going to get spoiled my whole life by someone who just thinks I invented sliced bread or something. And that was an old metaphor. Where did that even come from? I got to think, I invented the iPod. Let me put it that way. And even more terrible is that, I mean, as you date someone and are married with them similarly, you realize that you also train them in unhealthy habits. Like you, as you try to work out a partnership in marriage, oftentimes because of our finite knowledge of each other and ourselves, we end up making pacts and agreements about our marriage that actually are unhealthy. Like you kind of are like co-collaborators of your own vice. I mean, like, I'll forgive you for this sin if you kind of, you know, overlook this one. And it doesn't have to even be a sin. It could just be simply like, when I'm upset, I don't want to talk about how I feel. And she could just get used to that and expect me not to talk about how I feel when I should actually be talking about how I feel. Like, so part of marriage is actually training and then untraining and learning and then unlearning habits that are both good and bad and continually dialoguing with this person who is changing and not changing at the same time. Seems like all paradoxical, but just you're dealing with a real human being, and they're going to do things that surprise you in a pleasing way, and they're going to do things that surprise you in a terrible way that hurts, and they're going to do things that are totally typical, and you're going to look at them and go, are you serious that we're still doing this thing? Like, it feels like we had this conversation 4,000 times because you did. Like, and that's just the nature of existence, that they're going to look at you in the supermarket and go, we've talked about this, and you're going to bring it up in the supermarket? And that's just the way things go. So marriage is, it's disturbing. You think you're going to get good at it, and it does get different, but you're never quite sure if it's gotten better because you're always waiting for your own arrogance to all of a sudden be there, and you realize, oh my God, this whole time the word for that I've found is the most helpful word, and the word that seems to really seep into a marriage is this concept of resentment. Like, that even when this person is striving to love you, you can look at their striving and be like, yeah, but you know what? You don't love me as much as my mom loves me. And like, what a horrible, brutal rejection. Like, that this person is risking everything to be around you, and vice versa. Like, that you're striving to meet their needs emotionally, and they're still kind of going, eh. Like, well, that's marriage. Like, every day, working that out. I think it's worth it, though.
And it's wonderful.
It's wonderful. It is. It's good. If you are not
interested in suffering, then you have no business being a Christian. A Christian in general. Like, if you don't want God to come down and kill people you love and give you cancer, and if you don't want to, I don't know how I say things that are funny. Shit. I'm straight serious. I mean, you laugh. Wait till God kills you. Like. I got all this from him. I don't know why it sounds. When, if he said this stuff, you'd be like, he is so wise. Bunch of crap. So no. I'm infinitely fond of marriage, and to be married in my mind is to be as close as to be, you know, being refined by another human being. I mean, to take marriage seriously is to take absolutely how wretched and evil you are seriously, and to actually combat the very thing in you that I think is rebellious against God and wants to be God themselves. And so, I mean, I watch my father's a Christian in the sense that makes me want to throw up. And that he saved lives and helped people come to fantastic realizations. But ultimately, when he came home, he wasn't accountable to us. Like, and so I've dialogued with a version of Christianity I have absolutely despised for good reason. And even though you use the word spirit, I trust that I know what you mean. So I shouldn't have brought up my father. Always makes my brain go dead. So marriage, to see my father succeed in a Christian culture kind of way, and to my mind, fail utterly his wife and fail utterly his family, really inspired me to figure out what is key in this life and what is important. And I've and the suffering that you have in close, and it doesn't even have to be a marriage relationship, it has to be about relationships and people who hold you accountable, and I mean, that is, I mean, that's, I think, a real important battleground for one's Christian walk. Thank you.
Just before we get away from Denise's question, I think it's an important question for all of us, whether we're getting married or are married or not, that idea of, well, doesn't it make a difference being a Christian? Can I expect a change? And I think it's important to for us. I mean, it's the same question that we're asking about the person that I'm married to and in this relationship that I ask if I find myself wondering, am I really a Christian? Am I, you know, what I ought to be? And I think it has to come down to, yes, there is a reality. God is doing something. There is something different in this world between those that God has his hand on and those that he does not. But the difference is in that teachability thing. It's that being willing to admit that I am not what I ought to be hopeful in spite of what I see in myself in the world because God has promised to redeem things and all of that. So in the middle of a marriage relationship, to be willing to recognize your own faults, to be willing to be forgiving of your spouse because God has forgiven you, and to be hopeful that in spite of how difficult it can be, that this is really going someplace good ultimately, that's a huge thing, and it makes a huge difference. But I think when David's talking about how people don't change, I mean, Robbie and I have noticed, I mean, I think that as fundamentally in our relationship that we have grown more willing to be patient with each other, more willing to forgive each other. But if you look at our day-to-day interaction, we're actually much more crotchety than we used to be because we're becoming, as we get old, we're just getting to be more and more ourselves, you know. I mean, you lose some of that, of whatever incentive you had to kind of hide it, and it just all comes out. And every now and again, we comment to each other, you know, we're getting really, every now and then we just have to call a timeout and say, you know, why don't we back up here? This is, I mean, because we do, right? I mean, she comments this to me quite often, actually. But I think it's true. I mean, I guess I see that in myself, that on the one hand, I think, I really believe that fundamentally, I am a person who is more committed to being patient and forgiving with other people because I know how much I have to be forgiven for and that kind of thing. But I still have my same response to things. I am a very defensive person. My initial thing is to wait a minute, no, it's not me. I always do that. I've done that my whole life, and I just can't. But that's why I find great encouragement in what David was saying. It's not that first thing. I mean, it's ultimately, what are you willing to go away and talk to yourself about? And that's the place where the thing is going to make a difference. It's not in that, in the day-to-day, how do we interact? But if I'm heading down a wrong road again, what am I prepared to do about it? What am I prepared to admit? And that sort of thing, which can be profound and make a big difference. And that's what the Christian faith is like, whether you're married or not. That makes a huge difference. But on the other hand, I still have the same temptations and the same faults that I have recognized in myself my whole life. I'm still fighting them. I don't have somebody else's faults. I have my faults, and they're still very much alive. So I think that's the sense, right, that you mean. I mean, our relationship is better, I think, now. But we're still, I mean, she could tell you a lot about me, and I could tell you a lot about her. And those things, they're not different. I mean, we have long years of experience with that stuff. So I hope that's helpful. I mean, that's why marriage is a good thing. I mean, I could understand, I mean, the picture that we're painting here, you say, why would anybody ever enter into this relationship? Here, let me tie you for the rest of your life to this sinful person who's going to make you suffer. Why in the world would I want to do that? But There's also this great thing about, I mean, I believe in our relationship, which now we're going to be 30 years at our next anniversary, and we knew each other 7 years before that, so we've known each other a long time, a very long time. And there, I could tell you about her faults and she could tell you about mine, but I don't believe that there has ever been a moment in our relationship where we didn't fundamentally, I think we have always been on each other's side. And I trust her, and I think she trusts me. And that's a huge thing. I mean, to have a relationship with someone where you trust them for 37 years, that's great. And she has these faults, and I have these faults, and we have to live with that, I mean, both of us.
There's something that happens in marriage and over those years that is truly profound and is invaluable. And it's that iron sharpening iron. It's that in that process of becoming one with another sinner, over where you log year after year after year of working through those kinds of things, it transforms a person's soul. It either makes them more bitter or it makes them sweeter. And through the Spirit of God, that it becomes sweeter. It doesn't make you a great person in the sense of all of your flaws disappear. But there's a softness of your soul that's developed that is just phenomenal. And it can happen outside of marriage. It's not like marriage is the only place where that can happen, but marriage is a good place for that to happen, and it often does.
This question goes along the same lines, but it's a little bit different at the same time. Is if someone would like to get married, but at the same time, they have a real struggle at moments where they see constantly their own sinful self, to the point at even moments you'll have those days where you just hit one point and you see yourself doing a very evil thing to another person or whatever it is. And it can actually really hit you hard inside, and it makes you want to kind of vomit in some way, shape, or form. Why would you want to do that to another person and commit your life to that person when you see this happening? And even though I know there is grace and that plays a big part, but there's also wisdom involved. And one of the most amazing feelings is when you do that to someone who you do care about or who you're even just friends with, and you just see the grace for that friendship with the person being able to forgive it and at the same time realize that this is how you are in some way, shape, or form. That moment there is what would give hope, at least in my case, for the whole idea of marriage. But when you feel like a trash bucket, how do you get above that, I guess?
I get the trash bucket question?
Yeah, okay.
I'll take it too.
Okay, you want to go first?
No.
Okay. Jack has a distinction between guilt and conviction. Guilt being a feeling of general unworthiness that you wallow around in and really enjoy ultimately. Conviction being this thing that actually makes you want to be a different person. You're not specially evil. No one really is specially evil. I have unique vices myself. And ironically, my unique vices play straight to the reasons why my wife should run from me like the plague. That one was less funny. It should have been. So to accept God's grace, to accept... if that God brings someone to your life that's willing to put up with your sorry trash bucket ass, that would be a blessing that I don't think necessarily you have a reason to reject. And the assurance that I had with me and Jessica was that I would not hide how wretched I was. Like, we would have conversation after brilliantly painful conversation, and the purpose was that while I cannot be perfect, I control whether I'm honest or not. And so... my wife, I mean, granted, no one knows, but who a person is on the deep, deep, deep down. I think that the dating relationship me and my wife has was my attempt to show her that I was not going to hold any cards back. Like, that if I had a problem with lust that day, she was going to know it. Like, that if I did something wretched in any way, if I was driving down the street and decided to flip everyone off on one side of the street,
that's not even a sin. I don't know. I don't brought that up. Like, that was
only when it's both.
Yeah, it's both. Or if it's two hands and you're driving with your knees. But I use that as an example of something my wife would prefer I didn't do. Less of a sin. But I mean, for me as a man, like, I needed to be honest, and the great thing about when you kind of choose this path of letting someone know how trash bucket you are, if they love God, it is their, my wife's love of God is challenged when I let her down, and her response is, as I am forgiven, I should forgive you. Like, I mean, so in the same way, had I held things back and I not let her know that, you know, that she was getting in a relationship with someone who was extremely fond of porn, like, me holding that back would have not given her the opportunity to grow spiritually and learn to forgive someone as morally clumsy, to put it in a cute way, as myself. Like, it was important to be honest. It was important that she knew who she was, like, being in a relationship with. And the iron sharpens iron. I mean, my honesty had forced her to strive to be a better person as well. And so I'm just, that's all I'm saying. Bust it.
I was actually thinking along a similar line. There's kind of a good news, bad news thing in what you're identifying. And the bad news is, it's, you know, we're not great. We have a big problem with evil. I resist the trash bucket idea just because I think we're also really gloriously created, and that's why it's a problem that we are drawn to evil. Wouldn't really be a problem if we were trash, if we were drawn to evil. So I want to say that first, because I think that we are actually quite wonderfully created, and we have a terrible, terrible problem with evil. So that's the bad news. The good news is that we're not alone in that. And there's not a person in this room that doesn't have the same ultimate battle with being a magnificently created person who really struggles with evil. And so I would just reiterate what Toby said, that to be given the gift of someone who is willing to see me and to walk through life with me and to know that about me and to know that about themselves, and to give us the opportunity to not be alone in that together, is amazing. And that's really a good gift. And I would add that not being married doesn't make life any less difficult. It makes it more it makes it more difficult in some practical ways. But not being married is, it's not like it solves those problems. And so I think I would want to say that it's not marriage's fault that we have to face into these things. It's life and God's grace that reveals to us who we are in whatever context he decides to do that. For some of us, it's in the context of marriage, and for others of us, it isn't. But the gift of having someone that knows you and loves you and hangs out with you for 37 years is not a small thing. It's a wonderful gift. So.
Okay.
I'm not directing this comment to you personally, but just the issue that you've raised in your question. It does seem to me that the question that you've raised from that perspective, I think, should give me a little bit of pause on the question of whether I'm going to get married or ready to get married. Because ultimately, that issue of how I respond, how I deal with the coming to understand my own inadequacies, my own moral inadequacies, recognizing that they're true is a part of what I need to do, but believing that God is merciful and that there is a place for someone like me in the mercy of God is an important maturing thing to enter into, because what I'm saying is that ultimately if I'm at that stage in my life where I cannot forgive myself for what I see as my own evil, it's going to be hard for me to forgive my spouse too. And that's that, I mean, it's that recognition that, you know, yes, I do have this problem, but God is being incredibly kind to me, and there is hope. He's taking this and actually working it towards something that is going to be redemptive and good. That gives a perspective on it that I think is very important in helping to get past the rough spots in a relationship. So, yeah, that honesty about my own sin is good. But I think ultimately, if you come to the place where you would be ready to marry, I think what you would say to yourself is not, I'm saddling this person with some unforgivable mess of a sinner, but yes, I am a sinner and so is she, but I understand what the grace of God is all about, and so I'm ready to risk this because his grace can be found in the middle of that relationship as well. And that, I mean, that's a lifelong, I mean, that's a thing that we're going to struggle with and grow in as believers. But it is, I think it is an important thing to think about. And forgiveness is key, and forgiving yourself is a part of that as well. Okay, so Reed saying he thinks it's easier to forgive others than yourself. That would be a long conversation. I doubt it, actually. But we could talk about that.
Can I add on to that question? So I love what you guys are saying. That's all great. But if you have something in your life that actually is like a really big problem, like let's use like I'm a cocaine addict or something, that might be something possibly that you want to deal with before you, like, can you make the difference for me between, like, I'm ready to be married versus I just really am a sinful person, you know?
Mm-hmm. So your question is, if I'm a cocaine addict, maybe I do want to do some recovery work before I saddle a spouse with cocaine addiction.
That's it.
Yeah.
So embarrassing.
Actually, I think that's a really good question, because we all have issues that we could conclude are should be finished or worked through or something before we decide to marry someone, and certainly even before we decide I'm ready to make that decision to marry. And I think there is some wisdom in I'm thinking of a really bad saying that I heard a long time ago, but that has really rung true for me somehow. And that is that the thing to be looking at is what kind of person am I, rather than what kind of person are they in terms of preparing for marriage. So it kind of speaks to that I think it's really right that we take personal responsibility for the hurt that we bring, the ways that we've decided to cope with those hurts, if we have destructive ways of coping, and most of us do on some level. I think it's really important that we commit ourselves to individual responsibility of working with what that's like for us. And I don't think it necessarily will or needs to be finished when I decide to marry someone, because I just think that life is long, and I think it's more important what David is saying about teachability and a desire to move in a particular direction than that you've made a certain milestone or, you know, I mean, certainly with it's a very serious decision to make about what you decide to take on in a life partner, and what you decide to bring to a life partner if it's you that struggles. But I think in any marriage, what's going to be the most helpful is for both individuals to be committed to being responsible for themselves and for those issues and for working through between, it ends up being between them and God. It's between me and God, ultimately, how I decide to work with my addiction, for example. And that's going to be what feeds into a marriage in a good way. It doesn't have to be that that's a death knell, or that, you know, that means a marriage is going to be the worst thing you could try to do. It could be just the support that you each need to fight those battles.
And also with the teachability thing, it seems like if you think, all right, I'm going to get to this particular point and then I'll be ready, or, you know, then I've got that behind me, you're just going to be really sorely disappointed for the rest of your life, because you're never going to get, I mean.
I was going to add to Nancy's a little bit. That word commitment, it sounds so trite and we use it all the time, but really ultimately that's what it all comes down to, is once you've met this person and you've spent a whole 6 months together, you've decided that they're a good person, you still ultimately, even if you spent 7 years with them, you don't know what's going to happen 10 years down the road, 20 years down the road. Ultimately, it comes down to, am I gonna commit myself to this person or not, and do whatever it takes in my power to make it work for them, get to know them.
And the commitment is much a commitment of wanting myself to be an image, a reflection of Jesus Christo. I mean, like, the commitment, the reason why I struggle with the word commitment is because it's this idea, like, I could commit myself to marriage in the same way I could commit myself to, you know, being a good communist. Like, but the commitment we're describing is that you yourself are choosing to be a servant of another person. Like,
yeah.
But the servant, you, you're before God, and, but that the battlefield is really in your own heart. And
well, you can't make them commit to you.
Yes, exactly.
And so really it's your choice. Can I myself
be a person capable of commitment?
Be the person capable of commitment.
Oh, yeah.
And then ratifying that daily, every day when you're married.
Okay. I'm not sure if this is a very coherent question, but I think we were reading Descartes last week, I think, and one of the things that he brings up is how I don't really understand this very well, but he was talking about an object. I think he calls it a kilogon or something like that, like an object with 100 sides. And how we can't really imagine that. And so I wish it wasn't true, but I can't imagine what a good marriage is like. My parents have been married now for 26 years, and I've been witness 22 years. And like, I look at them and I kind of think to myself, like, well, what's so great about that? I mean, is that... You really don't understand what's so great about that unless you are that. You know? Does that make sense? How do I believe in something that I can't imagine? Maybe is my bigger question.
I guess I would recommend that's really good. I think that you have to develop your picture of it. And I think you might not be able to imagine it, but I think you get to decide what you believe it might look like, or what you'd like for it to look. I don't mean like idealize it. I don't mean that. But I think for me, one of the things that shifted was when I started to see people who were married that I could actually admire how they related to one another, and I could actually see some, I was a slow study. I was like, not, marriage was like, no thanks, you know. But after seeing, after being around some people who had marriages that I could really admire, my picture of marriage really started to shift. And so where a few years before that, I couldn't have imagined what a good marriage or a desirable marriage might look like, I started to form a really different picture. And so I think we can, it's like, it's not that you're going to imagine something that you're just going to make up or, you know, that, that isn't, doesn't exist. But I think you can decide what a marriage ought to look like and kind of even look for people in your world that you could maybe admire and maybe try noticing, what is it I admire about them? What is it that I like about the way they're married? What is it that might be desirable that they have together? Not to, I mean, you know, there's going to be hard things too, but it could even be that seeing how they work through the hard things is part of what you start to put into a picture of, this could be a really valuable thing to do. And certainly every marriage, kind of like David was saying, everybody has a different story about how they met or how they got together, and there's not really a formula for that at all. It's so individual, and I think on the day-to-day level, marriage is very individual that way. It's as individual as the two people that decide to get married. You can have it look like what you want it to look like in a lot of ways. You can still decide what complexion it's going to have, what you want it to be. But I think kind of having some fundamental principle kinds of things in your picture that are the things that you may fail at but you want to strive for could be really helpful. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Do you think that it's a responsibility of married people to show their interactions? Because my parents, I think, they haven't really talked to each other in front of me. I mean, really talk to each other. You know, like the marriage that they have is like their thing that they keep hidden. And it's like, well, like, how do I, you know, how do I learn if they hide it, you know? So do you think married people should show, you know, communicating and like the rawness and the beauty of it?
Well, it seems to me that there's something about marriage that is private. That I don't think that it would be right to live your marriage out on a stage so that everybody can see. There's something good and proper about it having a private side to it. But just being social beings and being out in the public, it seems to me that you can see a marriage when people are in public. When married people are out and about, you can see the marriage. That it's a way of being together, and they can't even hide that. I think it's possible, and it's probably, there probably is a good place for a married couple to certainly to the family, kind of make things known and not hide everything. But there is something good about that. But one has to be judicious. There are some things that, that really need to be kept private, and there are other things that, that can be made known to the family, because it's helpful to the family for them to get the kind of picture that you're talking about. And otherwise, they, you are not going to have that kind of opportunity very easily. But I think when you say you can't imagine a good marriage, I can't imagine not being able to imagine a good marriage.
Maybe because you're in one.
Well, and even before we got married, I would have said the same thing.
See, I came at it completely opposite. I mean, I couldn't imagine a good marriage before I got married. I had never seen one. My parents were divorced when I was very young. My parents are a mess. And there's no one, no friends that my parents had that had good marriages. And so, I mean, I can totally relate to that.
I think what I felt in me was probably what all humans feel, is this desire for a fellow traveler, a companion through life. And I think I got to the place where I was willing. I felt like I'd found a good man and was willing to take the chance that I'd found a good man and had a companion for life. But I'm totally with you. I had never seen it, and that's a shame. I mean, I hope we've given our kids at least a glimpse, even though we have our own little style and way of doing things, and they could probably read that in a lot of different ways. They have at least have a glimpse that that it's possible.
David, the first time I ever heard you talk was on this subject at the Collier House at a Bible study Wes Heard was doing on Sunday morning. And there's one thing you said that I'll never forget, because it was about probably a couple of years after you were married and a year or two before I got married. And you said the minute you got married, or no, not the minute, but as the weeks unfolded after you were married, you realized that there was a right way to fold the bath towel that you'd never...
And I've since given up on it. See, we don't change. No.
Happy anniversary, David.
Before this marriage topic came up, and before I became a believer, I wanted to be a monk, basically, or friar. This discussion's made me wonder if that might have been a smart idea at times. Just a joking question.
Back to something that Reed said earlier. I think that as part of getting to know ourselves, the gift that God is promising to each of us, to know our weaknesses, our need, our sinfulness, our creatureliness, our not being God, which we have to learn over and over again, that one of the things that we can learn, like Julian and Susan were talking about, they didn't have a picture of what a good marriage could be. We may not have had a picture of what forgiveness was, what transparency was, not have had, as we were children, parents who were saying, I'm sorry to the children, I was unkind. This is what it looks like when I'm sinning. And modeling that they know that there is mercy for them so they don't have to hide from it, so that they can ask for forgiveness and they can acknowledge it, and that when the child sins, that they also can extend mercy. That if we haven't had that, that it is much easier to see, in one sense, it may not be ultimately easier to forgive other people, but it's much less terrifying to see other people fail than to watch in someone else's eyes the impact of our failure and our evil, because we believe that there is no mercy for that, that is not possible. So it could be, in addition to the appropriate grief for our sin, it could be that we have not known the safety of mercy and grace, and that we have to learn that. I mean, we all have to learn that our whole life, but some of us have had some really good teaching of that while we were children. And if we didn't, that's going to be longer to learn. And so we can refuse to take risk in relationships and to show up and be real, because that is so unbearable, because it's never been safe. And we can call that our are grieving our sin, and it's actually our not knowing about grace and mercy. But we have to be patient with that too, because that takes a lot of time.
So, I'm still a little bit confused about how you guys keep saying that people are in change. And I know the emphasis is, like, that you guys, that it seems like people before getting married always think, oh, this person will change. And maybe you guys are just trying to emphasize the fact that, like, that's not always true. But to bring up the dad issue again, granted that I'm in the States and he's in Argentina and I haven't seen him for a long time except for a couple of days when I was home. I think that, like, a lot, like, a very important part of who he was has changed a lot. And when people asked you that, you guys said something like, well, yeah, some small things change, but really you're still the same person. And, I mean, I do see the fact that, like, in some ways he is still the same person, but I was, like, incredibly impressed at how much it seemed that he had changed. And so I'm confused about, like, what you guys are really trying to emphasize in saying that the person is probably not going to change. I would hope it's not true.
I can just say that if any of you guys had known me when I was 25, you would know that very large change is possible and that I would be unrecognizable. So absolutely, absolutely huge change. I think what we are saying is that the fundamental person doesn't change. So I'm still me. I mean, I'm still the me I was when I was 17 and when I was 25 and when I was 35, when I was 45. I'm still me. Have I gone through huge changes? Huge changes. So yes, people change. And by the grace of God, we are redeemed and granted new directions. And it's an amazing thing to be a part of and also to witness. And we're the same people. And the thing that doesn't change is, I think what we in our Christian culture so often confuse that with, like, before and after conversion experience, for example, is that I'm somehow not the same sinner that I was. And that's the part that I think we kind of camp on around here a bit, because I've told this story before, some of you have probably heard it, but when I first became a Christian again, when I was in my late 20s, it was a year or two after the fact that I realized, wow, because I had come into it deciding I'm not changing, which was, you know, good luck with that. But I was like, okay, God, I'm not doing this Christian thing. I'm not changing. But after a year or two, I had changed significantly. Some of those things were lifestyle changes that were pretty easy to change fundamentally. I mean, I could do behavioral changes that look really different. I mean, and they were really different. They looked really different in 2 years. But I remember thinking a year or two after I became a Christian again, thinking, that was probably the easy part. Because I could change the behavior, but what did I long for? What did I still want about those things? If I'm really honest between me and God, wish I could still run toward? And I'm not saying that very well, but just realizing that the core of me is, that's a bigger thing to change. And I think in that sense, I'm not changed. I mean, I'm still the same sinner I was when I became a Christian, before I became a Christian. I'm the same kind of sinner. I have learned to value different things, and that has made a huge change. And that is, I mean, I'm saying God has, over time, changed my tastes and changed my values, and that's very significant. And I don't think that until I get a new heart, when the Old Testament I think it's in Ezekiel where he talks about giving a heart of flesh to replace our heart of stone. That until I get a different heart, I'm still going to hurt people, even when I don't mean to. I'm still going to want things that aren't valuable at times. And I think that's why we camp on it so much, because a lot of our Christian culture says, no, I'm so different that I'm a whole new person. I don't want the same things. And it's like, well, if we're really honest with ourselves, I mean, huge, significant changes happen, and that's great. And that's really good. And I don't ever want to say that doesn't happen, because I'm living example of it happening. And I'm still a sinner, and I still fail. And I'm looking forward to finishing the race here and getting a new heart, because then I can rest. Then I'll be able to rest. And it's such work to not be the sinner that I am. And then I won't have to work so hard, because it will just come naturally. So that's, I think, what we're talking about when we camp on that so much. I don't know if that's helpful. Kind of went around the block on it. But
let me try this. There are some things that we can change easily. What we wear, those kinds of things. Those can be changed easily. Anybody can do that. Those don't count for much. If we get to the next level, it's our personality, the kind of how we are. That is extremely difficult to change. And we can try all we want, but that's really resistant to change. There's another level, and that's at the level of our spirit, our soul. God is primarily interested in working at that level. He is making changes there. To the extent that we are believers and we are of the elect and he's gone to work on us, he is changing that, transforming it. To what extent will that have an impact on our personality? It can a little bit, but usually it doesn't make much impact there. Right. Still can't tell which side's which. So God is really focusing on the spirit there. And that's where he's making the great change. But that's not always very apparent. It is apparent to someone who has eyes to see. But if you aren't looking for the right kinds of things, you aren't going to be able to see what changes have been taking place there. And the change that happens there is very profound. But it's just not obvious.
And it's also, when you're married, it's not really convenient either. Like the personality and the deeps, to borrow David's model, as God is changing this, there are aspects of the way that I relate to my wife that have changed. But there's also just the stylistic way I learn to relate to people. Like there's a language I have. There's a tendency, a knee-jerk tendency in me to respond to certain things a certain way. Like when confronted, I don't get loud. I get really quiet and I walk out of the room and I don't talk to someone for the next 4 years. Like that's the way I deal with certain kinds of conflict. And while there's a God changing the core of me that will start going, there's just things I should do differently. I mean, you'll be more empathetic to the other person, more forgiving, etc. But there's also just stylistic, relational stuff that more often than not, if someone approaches me with a certain tone in their voice, I will almost 99% of the time respond with like the double deuce or something like that, where it's just like, oh, it's on. And like, that's just part of the way my style of existence, and part of my wife is resigned to the fact that she married someone who has a certain style of existence, and part of her is continually challenging and sharpening part of the parts that, are immoral, are silly, are juvenile, maybe not necessarily sinful, but even just are kiddish, are unwilling to be mature. And so yes, I think my wife will always look at me as I do typically Toby things. I mean, that's why they're typically Toby. And at the same time, hopefully, as she watches me grow older, she'll see a wiser version of me emerge that knows how loud to get in certain situations. Stuff like that. You know what it is. Punch people less or something. I don't know. I forget how it works.
I just want to affirm, though, what you're describing isn't necessarily surprising either. I mean, if you're saying, it seems to me that I see this fundamental change in the way my dad is interacting with things, because sometimes that like, say, somebody can be, you've always known this person and they've always been, they always had to be right. They would never admit that they were wrong about anything or something like that. Well, you go through some hard times. God takes you through some things where you really have to confront, you know, that I have been wrong in a significant way. And it can break open in with someone. All of a sudden, they're looking at things differently, and you see in them a softness, an openness that you hadn't seen in them before. Their personality, in a sense, is still the same, but there are significant differences in the way they're reacting. That's not a surprise either. I mean, I think that can happen. The main reason we're talking about this change thing, I think the reason that David said at the beginning, is you cannot go into marriage thinking the way I'm going to solve this problem is I'm going to fix this person and then I won't have to deal with it, because 99% of the time it's not going to work. And then now how are you going to deal with it? It didn't work. They're still the same way, and now what am I going to do? And that's the main emphasis.
Okay, I've talked to you about this before. This is just a tricky one for me. So I'm in this place where now I'm all psyched up to go into marriage, ready to be a martyr, and put up with all of the suffering and everything. And but now in the place where I'm at, I'm struck with the question of, does it matter at all who I marry? I mean, should I wait until, like, I wake up one day and say, okay, I'm ready to get married and be the martyr, and then just go find the first girl I see on the street and be like, all right, marry me and torture me. Like, and yeah.
Careful what you wish for.
Well, that, it comes down to the issue of deciding what God's up to. And I don't think that it is wise to marry on the basis of what's going to cause me the greatest pain.
Good. Thank you.
You guys go ahead and write that down. Everybody.
There is plenty of difficulty coming in any case. And so the question is, what is God up to? I mean, how is God leading me, and what is God, this what's God doing? So it's a question of, if God is leading you to marry this person, then whatever the problems are, then those are the problems. And that's just what God's got next on your curriculum. And if not, then those aren't the problems. You got a whole different set of problems.
And how do I know if God's leading me?
That's real tough. I mean, the question is, the most important question is this a person that is teachable? Is this a person that is has a heart for God? Because if that is not the case, and you have a heart for God, then I guarantee you that is not the person you're supposed to marry.
Why is that?
Because God is asking you to become one with this person. God is asking you to merge lives with this person. And if he's asking you to merge lives with this person, then he's asking you to merge lives with a person who shares a heart for God. Otherwise, you've got a fundamentally flawed union that you're trying to create. So I think that is the question. And then beyond that, then it's just a matter of where does God seem to be leading me, and sorting that out as best you can. And I don't know how to... There's no magic to that. There's no method to that. It's just, what does God seem to be doing?
And I would just add that I think part of it's so individual, like we've been saying, but you see yourself, not only you're asking, does this person have a heart for God, and I have a heart for God, but this is somebody I want to join my life with. I mean, having that desire and having that about them personally, about it. So the martyr thing is like a really bad idea for the start, you know. That's not a good basis, but I understand, I think, what you're saying, because it can sound like that when we say how hard it is all the time. But so wanting to commit to that with this person is part of what is the information about whether God is leading me. Does that make sense? So if I find myself wanting to do that with this person, and the bottom line, that basic question is answerable. I think we both love God, and I think this is a person that it's worth the risk of joining my life with. Then, anyway, Susan.
I just wanted to add that if any of you have ever been to a wedding that either one of these Gutenberg guys performs, it's all about talking about the suffering of marriage. And I am always kidding my husband. He did one this last summer. Was it Sarah's wedding? Mm-hmm. And it was suffering, suffering. It's like all I heard for the whole talk was suffering. I got home and it was like, when somebody stood up afterwards and came to me and said, "Oh my, how do you do it? Your marriage must be horrible." So I'm always kidding David that it's like suffering. I'm going to make you suffer so that when you preach on that, it's not. Anyway, it's not all suffering.
I think it is nice to like the person you're married to, but I always think back to Martin Luther and the circumstances under which he got married. The Reformation had happened. They were disbanding convents. There was one convent that they were disbanding. They had and it was Luther's principle that they not disband a convent unless they had found a man to marry each nun, because it was difficult for a woman to support herself on her own. They disbanded this convent, and it turned out, for some reason, that they were one man short. So he married the leftover nun. Yeah, the leftover nun. And I think it's really interesting, because he was committed to that marriage not on the basis of liking the person. He was committed to that marriage because it was the right thing to do. And it turned out to be a very good marriage by all accounts. So it is nice to like the person that you're married to, but God works in strange ways.
And he deemed her to be none left over.
On that note, I think we're done.